Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Wednesday, July 10th, 2019. Coming up this hour,
Wall Street awaits testimony from Jerome Powell.
The Fed is facing a difficult dilemma here.
People are really going to be watching to see what he has to say.
They're scared stiff about Trump and his trade policies.
Complete coverage of the Fed chairman's testimony all day on Bloomberg Radio.
Top Democrats call for Labor Secretary Alex Acosta to quit, plus a setback for President Trump's citizenship census question. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm Rob Buschka. Ahead in sports, a hometown hero wins All-Star Game MVP as it's seventh straight for the American League. And the top three men in the world play this morning at Wimbledon.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. On Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Global stocks in a holding pattern ahead of testimony from Fed Chairman Jerome Powell. Coming up to 5:01 on Wall Street, we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are down 4.5 points. Dow futures down 41. NASDAQ futures down 12. The DAX in Germany is down 0.33%. CAC in Paris and the FTSE 100 both down 0.1%. Nikkei 225 in Japan was down about 0.2%, while the Hang Seng in Hong Kong gained 0.3%. 10-year Treasury down 12.32, yield 2.10%. Yield on the 2-year, 1.92%. NYMEX crude oil up 2%, up $1.18 to $59.01 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.33%, down $5 to $13.95.50 an ounce. The euro, 1.1223 against the dollar. The yen, 108.94. Nathan.
Karen, it is all about the Fed today as Chairman Jerome Powell prepares to testify before Congress. We begin our coverage with a preview from Bloomberg Economics and Policy Correspondent Michael McKee.
The key question, does Chairman Powell ratify the rate cut markets have priced in for the end of July? To this point, data have shown the economy slowing but not in trouble, and the much stronger than expected June jobs report is a potential argument for holding off. Powell may also want to send a message the Fed can't be bullied by President Trump, whose anti-Powell tweets are also certain to be a topic of the back-to-back hearings before the House and Senate. But analysts say the chairman is likely to repeat the central bank's June statement pledge to act as appropriate to sustain the economic expansion. That gives him a tiny bit of wiggle room while not disappointing investor expectations. In Washington, Michael McKee, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Michael, thank you. Ahead of that testimony, we're seeing traders scale back expectations for rate cuts beyond July, with the spread between 2- and 10-year Treasury yields narrowing in the last 2 weeks. Mark Cranfield is a macro strategist for Bloomberg.
This is really how we're going to determine whether or not the curve has it right or has it wrong. So there should be quite a bit of volatility in the U.S. bond market. That will play out in different sectors of the curve. One of the things that we'll be watching to see is whether or not this 2s, 10 years, whether it flips back to a more positive direction as people adjust their expectations for where the rates are going in the next few months.
It could be a bit of a tightrope act for Chairman Powell today. UniCredit Chief Economist Eric Nielsen will be listening for comments on the Fed's outlook for trade tensions with China.
Their forecast is more optimistic than they truly believe because they're scared stiff about Trump and his trade policies.
The June jobs report points to strength in the economy, while weak inflation and trade tensions represent downside risks. Lena Kamaleva is chief economist at G Plus Economics.
The Fed is facing a difficult dilemma here between strong fundamentals on the one hand and strong risks on the other. From the fundamental perspective, there is no sign of the kind of imbalance that would require a cleansing recession. But at the same time, corporate debt is high enough and consumer savings low enough for the Fed to not be able to get much growth dividend from any further easing. So that means the Fed has to be preemptive.
Morgan Stanley sees the Fed cutting rates by 50 basis points this month, despite Friday's strong jobs report. Catch live coverage of Chairman Powell's testimony on Bloomberg Radio and television beginning at 10 a.m. Wall Street time.
And also on the agenda today, minutes from the Fed's June policy meeting. We get more on that from Bloomberg's Vinnie Del Giudice.
Coming on the same day as congressional testimony by the Fed chair, the meeting minutes could carry less shock value than usual. Nonetheless, they will provide a glimpse at the thinking of other Fed officials, many of whom have since signaled a rate cut. The policy statement issued following last month's meeting expressed doubt about hitting the Fed's 2% inflation target. Vinnie Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Vinny, thank you. Meantime, on the trade front, we have the first report of high-level talks resuming between the U.S. and China. Bloomberg's John Tucker joins us live with the latest. Good morning, John.
And good morning, Karen. The U.S. Trade Representative and Treasury Secretary spoke on the phone with her counterparts in Beijing yesterday. The White House Economic Advisor Larry Kudlow characterized the discussion as constructive.
Hopefully we can pick up where we left off, but I don't know that yet. And our team, Ambassador Lighthizer, Secretary Mnuchin, are exploring all that. And discussions today, again, went constructively, but too soon for details.
The Financial Times says the U.S. agreed to tone down criticism of Chinese rule in Hong Kong in order to restart trade talks. Officials say negotiations will continue as appropriate without offering details on the next steps. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, John, thanks. And when it comes to the trade dispute between South Korea and Japan, Korean President Moon Jae-in is warning business leaders to prepare for an extended standoff. Here he is speaking through an interpreter.
Our government is making determined efforts to have Japan's unfair export restrictions withdrawn and to find countermeasures. Most importantly, the government is committed to finding a diplomatic solution. We hope that Japan does not push this to a dead-end street.
But Tokyo is standing by its decision to curb exports of material used to make computer chips and displays. Japan's deputy press secretary says the measures will not be withdrawn.
This measure is a necessary review of export controls for Japan's national security concerns and not a monetary issue. Such measures do not violate free trade rules.
The restrictions come after South Korean courts ruled last year that Japanese companies should compensate Koreans for working at mines and factories during Japan's colonial rule over Korea.
Trading volumes in Asia were thin overnight as we await testimony from Fed Chairman Jerome Powell. Bloomberg's Yvonne Mann joins us from Hong Kong with details. Good morning, Yvonne.
Good morning, Karen and Nathan. Equities were mixed as Treasury yields hit three-week highs. The Nikkei fell by a tenth of 1%. The Kospi was higher. Samsung and SK Hynix saw a second day of gains as analysts now say memory chip prices are set to rise. In Hong Kong, Yvonne Mann, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Yvonne, thanks. Oil's heading higher after an industry report showed a drop in U.S. inventories. The American Petroleum Institute says stockpiles fell by 8 million barrels last week. Checking prices now, West Texas Intermediate's up 1.9% at $58.92 a barrel. Straight ahead, the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg. And it's 5:07 on Wall Street. Michael Barr has more on what's going on around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. Calls are getting louder from several Democratic lawmakers and presidential candidates for Labor Secretary Alex Acosta to step down. Acosta was a federal prosecutor in Florida when he played a role in a secret plea deal in 2008 that let financier Jeffrey Epstein avoid federal prosecution after he was accused of molesting teenage girls. Epstein now has been charged with child sex trafficking in New York. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer.
I am calling on Secretary Acosta to resign. It is now impossible for anyone to have confidence in Secretary Acosta's ability to lead the Department of Labor.
President Trump praised Acosta, but said he'll give the handling of the Epstein case a close look. A New York judge says the Justice Department can't change lawyers so late in the dispute over whether to add a citizenship question to the 2020 census. Bloomberg's Bob Moon reports.
Why would the Trump administration seek to replace lawyers handling the lawsuit? Citing a person familiar with the matter, the Washington Post reported some of the original lawyers on the case had concerns about the way the government was handling it. The Trump administration hasn't offered details. Indeed, U.S. District Judge Jesse Furman in Manhattan called the government's request patently deficient, adding the U.S. had provided no reasons, let alone satisfactory reasons, for the substitution of counsel. Bob Moon, Bloomberg Daybreak.
A top House Democrat accused Attorney General William Barr of trying to discourage former special counsel Robert Mueller from testifying to Congress next week. Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff reacted to Barr's comments in South Carolina on Monday when he said he was disappointed that House Democrats had subpoenaed Mueller to testify on July 17th. In the UK, members of Parliament delivered a sharp warning to the country's next prime minister, saying they will not allow him to pursue a no-deal Brexit without a fight. Bloomberg's Robert Hutton reports from London.
By a single vote, MPs passed a measure aimed at stopping the UK's next leader from forcing the country out of the EU without an agreement. Minutes after the vote, the two men vying to replace Theresa May as prime minister clashed on television in a bad-tempered debate, with Boris Johnson, the favourite, refusing to rule out suspending Parliament if it's the only way to deliver Brexit on time. In London, Robert Hutton, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Global news 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok, on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. 5:09 on Wall Street. Time for an all-star Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Good morning, Rob Bushka.
Good morning, Nathan. The Midsummer Classic feels like just another game to the American League.
This would be the second time that Chapman does that feat, and he's got him. Struck out the side. And a smile from Aroldis Chapman as he gets the All-Star Game save. And the American League has now won seven straight.
Fox on the call. A bit more reassuring when you have Yankee All-Star Aroldis Chapman on your side, closing it out 4-3 the final, the seventh win in a row for the junior circuit. Yankees' Gleyber Torres and Gary Sanchez each went 1-for-2. Home Run Derby champion and Mets rookie Pete Alonso with a two-run single in the eighth inning that made it close 4-3 before Chapman nailed it down. A late addition to the roster, Cleveland pitcher Shane Bieber won the All-Star MVP, striking out the side in front of the home crowd.
It was definitely a whirlwind being added to the team about, you know, 4 or 5 days ago. I wasn't sure what to expect, and then was told I was pitching the fifth yesterday, and really just wanted to go out there and get three outs and represent the city well. And, you know, this is an unbelievable experience just to be able to be here and do it for the home crowd.
Yankee Masahiro Tanaka with the win. Dodgers' Clayton Kershaw, the losing pitcher. Baseball resumes Thursday with one game, while the Yankees host the Blue Jays Friday and the Mets head to Miami for the weekend. Wimbledon, the ladies are off today to make way for the top three men in the world to play, as world number one Novak Djokovic plays at 8 Eastern against Belgium's David Goffin at 10:30 Eastern. Both Rafael Nadal and Roger Federer take the courts. Basketball, the Knicks are reworking a two-year deal with Reggie Bullock. That's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. Nathan?
And Rob, a ticker tape parade to honor the World Cup champion U.S. women's soccer team begins at 9:30 a.m. in New York City. It'll be the city's first ticker tape parade since the last time the team won the World Cup 4 years ago. The procession will move up the Canyon of Heroes, a section of Broadway between the Battery and City Hall. S&P futures down 5 points. Dow futures down 45 points. NASDAQ futures down 16. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. It's coming up to 5:12 on Wall Street. Straight ahead, ahead of Chairman Powell's testimony on the state of the U.S. economy, we speak with Dennis Gartman, publisher of the Gartman Letter. You are listening to Bloomberg Radio on this Wednesday morning.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. The European Commission is cutting its forecast for euro area growth and inflation. Those headlines just crossing the Bloomberg. In its quarterly forecast, the EU's executive arm trimmed its 2020 euro area GDP projections to 1.4% from 1.5%. Forecasts for inflation both this year and next were lowered to 1.3%, and that's strengthening ECB President Mario Draghi's case for further stimulus measures. U.S. Treasuries are falling along with European government bonds, while stocks are edging lower as investors await clues on policy from Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are down 4 points, Dow futures down 33, NASDAQ futures down 12. The DAX in Germany is down 0.3%, 10-year Treasury down 12/32nds, yield 2.10%, yield on the 2-year 1.92%. NYMEX crude oil up 2.1% or $1.23 to $59.06 a barrel. COMEX gold down a third of a percent or $4.70 to $13.95.80 an ounce. The euro 1.1223 against the dollar, the yen 108.93. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. Top Democrats, including Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, are calling for Labor Secretary Alex Acosta to step down. It comes after Acosta, a prosecutor more than a decade ago, approved a deal in Florida that gave financier Jeffrey Epstein a light sentence on sex trafficking charges. A U.S. district judge in New York ruled the Justice Department can't change lawyers so late in the dispute over whether to add a citizenship question to the 2020 census. In Major League Baseball, the American League won last night's All-Star Game 4-3. At Wimbledon, Serena Williams beat fellow American Allison Risk to reach the semifinal. Simona Halep also advanced. A ticker tape parade for the World Cup champs will be held this morning for the U.S. women's soccer team in New York. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thank you. It's 519 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. And we welcome this morning Dennis Gartman, the publisher of the Gartman Letter, as we all await Fed Chairman Jerome Powell's 2 days of testimony on Capitol Hill. What signals should the market expect from the chairman over the next couple of days, Dennis?
Patient. They will be patient. The word patient will be patiently attributed every time on a patient manner. That's, if I can be blunt, nothing much is going to happen. This is a tightrope for the Fed chairman to have to walk. He has a president who's forcing him or asking him or wishing him to push rates lower. There really isn't that great a reason to push rates down, and he has to be patiently explaining to us that we are, that he is and the rest of the FOMC is data dependent. And as I said in my newsletter this morning, I hope that all Feds, current, past, and in the future, will be also data dependent. What else can a Fed do but wait to see what data has? So I think we'll hear the word patient more often than not today. And in all likelihood, nothing much will happen.
So then you are not expecting, as the market has been pricing in for so long now, a rate cut this month?
I think that, in all honesty, I think the Fed has no choice but to cut rates by 25 basis points. However, I disagree with the market that says that a second and perhaps even a third rate cut will happen later this year. I think that that's very doubtful. So the odds are 100% that we'll get a rate cut this month at the FOMC meeting, but that probably shall do it for the rest of the year.
And what does that mean for the markets if the Fed does maintain its patient course?
I think it's probably, well, first of all, it has been, it is now, and probably shall continue to be a bull market. I'm somewhat surprised by the strength of the stock market as it has been over the course of the past several years. Every time I try to sell it short, it proves to be an ill-advised decision on my part. Every time I buy it, it proves to be an advised decision on my part. The trend has been from the lower left to the upper right, and the odds are that it will continue to be so. I've been at this for 45 years. I trade only for my own account, so I have my own money at risk. And all I've learned is don't fight the Fed. Don't fight the trend. Every time you do, you'll lose money.
What do you see the yield curve doing if the Fed goes ahead with a cut?
I would hope that the yield curve would become less inverted. We're inverted at the very short end of the curve, and I hope that if the Fed does cut rates, which I think, again, I think they shall at the next FOMC meeting, the inversion will be less pronounced. I hope that we can get back to a positively sloped yield curve over sometime over the course of the next 6 months or so. Let's see if that happens. But the inversion that we've had at the very short end has been obviously bothersome. It characteristically, that is indicative of an impending recession. And you have to be careful.
Does that mean it's a good time to get into gold?
I think it's been a good time to be in gold for the past 6 months or so. I've owned gold in euro terms. I've owned gold in dollar terms. The trend in gold has been upward. And interestingly enough, the trade that has done me the best good in the past several months is to be, strangely, long gold and long the bond market. Normally, those two move in contravention one to the other, but lately they have been moving in convention one with the other. And I see no reason to think that that's going to change. So that might be the best hedged trade of all, to be long of the bond market at the medium term, 5 to 10 years, and long of the gold market at the same time.
There's a lot of warning about downside risk later on in the year. If the Fed stands pat on rates, does that exacerbate that risk further?
It probably does. I mean, let's be honest. Share prices have been extraordinarily extended. There are all sorts of problems extant out there. There's geopolitical risk. There's geonatural risk. There are risks attendant to the stock market. The trend has been up. But if the Fed were to tighten monetary policy sometime before the end of the year, and that's not going to happen, but if they were to do so, that would clearly be deleterious to stock prices.
About only about 30 seconds left here. So if the message is patience, what does that mean for volatility for the market?
Probably less and less volatility until one day we walk in and we'll see the market down 500 Dow points under some geopolitical circumstance. But until that happens, probably means less volatility, not more.
Dennis Gartman, the publisher of the Gartman Letter, always good to get your insights. Thanks for being with us here ahead of Fed Chairman Jerome Powell's testimony on monetary policy and the state of the American economy. Our coverage begins on Bloomberg Radio and Television at 10 a.m. Wall Street time. Right now it is 5:24 on Wall Street, and taking a look at the market snapshot ahead of the testimony, futures pointed lower with S&P futures down 3.5 points. Dow futures down 26, NASDAQ futures down almost 9 points, modest losses ahead of the Powell testimony. Straight ahead, much more on the Fed's 2 days of testimony on Capitol Hill, the chairman appearing before lawmakers, plus all the latest in business, economics, and finance. I'm Nathan Hager. This is Bloomberg. For breaking news wherever you are, Bloomberg and Twitter bring you TikTok, the first global news network designed for social media, offering live video coverage and hourly updated top news reports verified by Bloomberg at TICTOC.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We're just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. futures and stocks in Europe are lower, and Treasury yields are trading near a three-week high ahead of congressional testimony by Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell. We get more from a Bloomberg macro strategist, Mark Cranfield.
People are really going to be watching to see what he has to say, particularly about the months ahead. I think most people agree that July is almost a done deal. So what guidance is he going to give them? Will there be subsequent rate cuts in September, December, possibly the beginning of next year? And if so, how many?
Eric Nielsen, chief economist at UniCredit, believes trade tensions between the U.S. and China pose a big dilemma for the Fed.
Their forecast is more optimistic than they truly believe because they're scared stiff about Trump and his trade policies. So his big dilemma is, how do you actually justify easing on the back of something you can't really say?
Catch live coverage of Powell's testimony on Bloomberg Radio and Television beginning at 10 a.m. Wall Street time.
As for trade, we have the first report of high-level talks resuming between the U.S. and China. Bloomberg's John Tucker joins us live with the latest. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Karen. U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer and the Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin spoke on the phone with their Chinese counterparts. The White House Economic Advisor Larry Kudlow characterized the phone discussion as constructive and said officials are planning more meetings, but that no details have been confirmed. And according to a Financial Times report, the U.S. agreed to tone down criticism of Chinese rule in Hong Kong in order to restart trade talks. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
John, thanks. The U.K. economy rebounded in May as auto factories resumed work following Brexit-related shutdowns. GDP rose 0.3% after a decline in the previous month.
The European Commission is cutting its forecast for euro area growth and inflation. The EU trimmed its 2020 euro area GDP projection to 1.4%, while forecasts for inflation were lowered to 1.3%.
Oil is extending gains as a report of a sharp drop in U.S. stockpiles adds to Middle East tensions already raising the prospect of strained supplies. Checking prices now, West Texas Intermediate's up 2% at $58.99 a barrel, while Brent is up 1.8% at $65.33.
On the corporate front, Tesla shares up 1% this morning. According to an internal email, the company is telling employees it's ready to increase production.
And shares of Levi Strauss are down more than 6% in early trading. Profit in its second quarter as a public company tumbled from a year earlier.
S&P futures are down 3.5 points. Dow futures down 26. NASDAQ futures down 9.5. And the 10-year Treasury down 11/32nds, yield 2.10%. And straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg.
Thank you, Karen. 5:33 on Wall Street. Let's bring in Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Nathan. Top Democrats are calling on Labor Secretary Alex Acosta to step down. Financier Jeffrey Epstein was able to avoid a prison sentence over a decade ago when Acosta, who was a prosecutor then, approved a deal that gave Epstein a lighter sentence. Federal prosecutors in New York are now pursuing charges after they say they have new evidence. Congressman Jerry Nadler, who chairs the House Judiciary Committee, says Acosta has not shown good leadership.
I don't know. All I do know is that it shows a moral perversion on the part of Acosta himself and his total unfitness to hold any office in the United States.
President Donald Trump raised Acosta, but said he'll give the handling of the Epstein case a close look. A New York judge says the Justice Department cannot change lawyers so late in the dispute over whether to add a citizenship question to the 2020 census. U.S. District Judge Jesse Furman ruled the lawyers must cite satisfactory reasons for withdrawing. President Trump will announce an overhaul of the U.S. approach to care for people with kidney disease today. The White House says it's an effort intended to move more patients out of costly dialysis centers and increase transplants. In New Orleans, a three-judge panel heard oral arguments aimed at scrapping the entire Affordable Care Act. The ultimate outcome will affect a number of issues, including protections for people with pre-existing conditions. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
During the campaign across the country, the Republicans were saying, we're for preserving the pre-existing medical condition. And yet they vote over and over again to prevent it, and now they're taking it to court.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says lawmakers want to keep coverage for pre-existing conditions.
There's nobody in the Senate not in favor of covering pre-existing conditions. Nobody. And if that were under any of these scenarios to go away, we would act quickly on a bipartisan basis to restore it.
Fans are remembering Emmy-winning actor Rip Torn, who died at age 88. And the nation is also remembering former presidential candidate H. Ross Perot, who died at age 89. It's parade day for the U.S. women's national soccer team in Manhattan. The ticker tape parade for the World Cup champs will begin at 9:30 a.m. and move up Broadway between the Battery and City Hall. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. 5:35 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update with Rob Buschka.
Good morning, Nathan. It's an impressive streak at any level in any sport. 7 in a row. They call it ownage in the sports world as the All-Star game from Cleveland goes to the American League 4-3. But not before Mets rookie and home run derby champion Pete Alonso had something to say.
Go-ahead run at the plate. Alonso. It gets through Torres and into left center field, and two runs are going to score. This is a one-run ball game.
Fox on the call as close as you'd get, though, as that brought the National League to a 4-3 score before Aroldis Chapman came on from the Yankees to pick up the save. Gary Sanchez and Gleyber Torres each went 1-for-2. Masahiro Tanaka earned the win. The Mets' Jeff McNeil was 0-for-1, and Dodger Clayton Kershaw the losing pitcher. Cleveland pitcher Shane Bieber won hometown MVP honors, striking out the side in the fifth inning. One game slated for Thursday as the Yankees and Mets begin their second half on Friday. Yankees host Toronto, the Mets visit the Marlins. NBA, the newest Knick, Julius Randle, hoping the third time's a charm in his NBA career.
Man, I'm very excited. I say it's a dream come true for me, you know, being able to play for this iconic franchise and, you know, I had this opportunity ahead of me, so I'm excited.
The former Kentucky star played for the Lakers and Pelicans as well, and New York's also restructuring a two-year deal for Reggie Bullock. In Wimbledon, the ladies give way to the men this morning as the top three all look to advance. Number one, Novak Djokovic, battles David Goffin at 8 Eastern, followed by Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal. They're both in action at 10:30. And that's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. Nathan?
Thank you, Rob. 5:37 on Wall Street. The latest edition of Bloomberg Business Week is on newsstands now. The heist issue, with stories on robbers, hackers, and smugglers. Plus, how to fix a soccer match. Ira Boudway wrote the story for Bloomberg Business Week.
There's a lot of ways to tilt a match. You can bet on who's going to get the first corner kick. You can bet on, obviously, the wins, the over under, you know, the total score, all that stuff. And there's a lot of ways to influence it that are not 100% obvious right away. And that's a big key when you're trying to manipulate a match.
Read more about this and other stories in this week's edition of Bloomberg Business Week. Know what matters and why. Visit businessweek.com or pick up a copy of the magazine on newsstands now. And listen to Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly weekdays at 2 p.m. Wall Street time here on Bloomberg Radio. 5:38 on Wall Street. Time now for the Tri-State Business Report with Bloomberg's Ed Khoury. Good morning, Ed.
Hi, Nathan. New York City companies that finance the purchase of taxi medallions will be required to prepare written documents for all transactions and disclose conflicts of interest when brokers also act as lenders. The move follows an investigation of the industry that uncovered abuses. Well, the misclassification of workers as independent contractors rather than employees is a growing problem in New Jersey. A report from Governor Phil Murphy's Task Force on Employee Misclassification proposes more than a dozen remedies. The governor says his administration is already implementing some of those reforms. Connecticut State Senate President Pro Tem Martin Looney is urging that state's attorney general to appeal a new court ruling. The decision overturns a law that limited the length of Tweed New Haven Airport's main runway. Airport officials say they can't attract more commercial flights because the runway is too short. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey. Nathan?
Ed, thanks. 5:39 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on KTRH in Houston. Energy companies evacuating the Gulf ahead of Tropical Storm Barry.
I'm Joan Doniger telling KNX listeners in L.A. about the locally based kitchen sharing business that's expanding in South Korea.
I'm Roger Hearing on Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We're reporting on the market's dovish expectations ahead of congressional testimony from the head of the Fed.
I'm Andrew O'Day on WBZ in Boston. I'm talking about the launch of daily flights aboard Cape Air to Portland, Maine from Boston's Logan.
I'm Ed Corey on KFBK in Sacramento. I'm reporting Tesla is getting ready to boost electric vehicle production at its auto plant in Fremont, California.
And those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. Tesla CEO Elon Musk is busy. His SpaceX is selling another $214 million in equity, the third offering the rocket company's held since December. A filing says another $100 million will be offered. The lone investor has not been identified, but 3 days after the initial sale date, the Ontario Teachers Pension Plan announced it had backed SpaceX. Futures pointed lower ahead of Powell's testimony before the House this morning. You are listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And it's coming up to 5:41 on Wall Street. Straight ahead, we check in with Bloomberg Opinion, our global platform for fast commentary and instant analysis of some of this morning's top news. This is Bloomberg.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. U.S. Treasuries are falling along with European government bonds while stocks are extending their declines. And so are U.S. stock index futures as we await Federal Reserve testimony by Chairman Jerome Powell. And right now, S&P futures are down 7 points. Dow futures down 64. NASDAQ futures down 23. The DAX in Germany is down 0.5%. 10-year Treasury down 11 32nds. The yield 2.10%. The yield on the 2-year 1.92%. NYMEX crude oil is up 1.9% or $1.13 to $58.96 a barrel. And COMEX gold is down 0.1%, down $2 to $13.98.40 an ounce. The euro 1.1226 against the dollar, and the yen is at 108.89. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Karen. The political fallout is growing over the arrest of billionaire Jeffrey Epstein on federal sex trafficking charges. Labor Secretary Alex Acosta is facing calls to resign over his then role as a prosecutor in 2008. In a plea agreement that allowed Epstein to avoid federal charges. States hoping to save the Affordable Care Act have been hit with some intense and occasionally skeptical questioning from appellate judges in a New Orleans federal court. Attorneys for a coalition of Republican-led states are pushing to have the law overturned, arguing Obamacare is unconstitutional when Congress zeroed out the tax imposed on people who don't buy health insurance. The American League won MLB's All-Star Game last night at Wimbledon. Serena Williams and Simona Halep advanced. A ticker tape parade for the World Cup champs will be held this morning for the U.S. women's soccer team in New York. Global news 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thanks. We are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, where it's coming up to 5:49 on Wall Street. Time to check in with Bloomberg Opinion, our global platform offering informed perspectives on a range of global topics and expert data-driven commentary on breaking news. Bloomberg Opinion Editor Jennifer Ryan is with us from our London Bureau as we await Powell on Capitol Hill for the next day or two. Jen, and Tim Dewey writes this morning that the question for markets is whether they've been led into a dove trap. What's his meaning here?
Well, it's absolutely no secret that Fed policy has turned dovish this year. And in the context of soft economic data, growing global risks, this shift really leaves little doubt that the Fed intended its next move to be a rate cut. And in fact, it was kind of sounding as if they were almost pre-committed.
So Wall Street really bought the Fed rate cut story then?
That's exactly right. So, you know, after Powell's remarks in early June and then the Fed abandoning its patient policy guidance, you had yields on U.S. Treasuries dropping to their lowest since 2017, stocks posting one of their best months in June in recent years, and the dollar weakening. You even had chatter at one point of a 50 basis point cut. Dewey's point is that it seems unlikely that the Fed's ever going to achieve consensus on anything more than a 25 basis point rate cut this month, because the thinking is that what's needed is an insurance cut that keeps the economy on track for a soft landing. I mean, assume that the more hawkish members of the FOMC agree to this. They're going to demand data showing a sharp slowdown in the economy to justify any further rate reductions. But the economy itself is not really experiencing the type of broad-based and sharp deceleration in activity that would really justify a series of rate cuts at this time. And, you know, there are some arguments that the data don't even justify the need for a rate cut at this point.
Yeah, I mean, we got that major data point just a few days ago in the June jobs report.
That's exactly right. And then that's not the only issue there. I mean, you had ISM indicators for manufacturing and services remaining in an expansion territory. So the idea here is that the Fed looks like it's going to move preemptively in the face of downside risks so that they don't need to follow with a series of rate cuts. But getting this message across is going to be challenging considering, as Dewey describes it, we're all more familiar with a preemptive rate hike to contain inflation while rate cuts often come too late. So what do we have to watch out for? It's the possibility that Powell shifts the tone of his messaging this week and emphasizes the underlying strength of the economy and the idea that any policy adjustments at this point would be modest shifts to reinforce the expansion. This should be a clear indication that markets have pulled away from the Fed.
Yeah, and it will be fascinating to listen to that messaging again, beginning at 10 a.m. Wall Street time this morning, as our coverage begins then on Bloomberg Radio and Television. But in the meantime, let's move on to the big news in Mexico yesterday, the sudden resignation of the finance minister. It sent the peso plunging. John Authors writes that a tweet could undo Mexican President Andrés Manuel López Obrador's months-long efforts to convince international markets that he can be trusted with the presidency.
Yeah, the author says that the sudden resignation of Carlos Urzúa as the finance minister and the resignation letter he posted on Twitter are really deeply damaging. He was a U.S.-educated economist, and he spent 3 years as AMLO, as the president is known, as his head of finance when he was the mayor of Mexico City. And so AMLO surprised critics by running the city relatively conservatively. So it's very damaging that a man who has been so closely involved in the AMLO project and played an important role in his success should have decided to quit.
Yeah, the finance ministry in Mexico has a pretty important status in the country, right?
Yeah, and that's what drives what's disturbing about this whole affair. The finance ministry is known as Hacienda, has a strong tradition of independence and continuity, and it's remained intact over the last two decades as Mexico has inched its way, you know, on the path of democracy. And it's thanks to Hacienda that Mexico's credit has been rated investment grade since 2002, and the country's regarded as so safe that it can even issue century bonds. And in a country of weak institutions, the finance ministry is a vital exception, and Orsura's resignation now puts that institutional strength to the test.
And Authors notes that Orsura's public reasons for quitting could be even more damaging.
Yeah, in his letter, he pointed out that he had to contend with functionaries getting imposed on the finance ministry who had no real knowledge of it, and a movement away from economic policies, the idea that they must be based on evidence and free of all extremism from either the left or the right. So from a close colleague of AMLO, an address to an audience worried that the new president is an extremist prone to appointing cronies who might want to weaken the orthodox hold over the finance ministry, this is as damaging as an allegation as the former finance minister could possibly have made. I mean, ultimately, AMLO knows that he's answerable to the international capital markets, and a run on the peso or steep hike in borrowing costs would really render his more ambitious plans moot.
Bloomberg Opinion Editor Jennifer Ryan, thank you as always. Read more at Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPIN Go on the Bloomberg Terminal. Karen.
Thanks, Nathan. 5:54 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Law Report. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning with Joan Doniger in the Bloomberg 99.1 Washington newsroom.
Facebook, Alphabet, Google, and other tech giants would be regulated by a new federal data protection agency under a proposal by a pair of House Democrats. IRS Commissioner Charles Reddick said he's considering creating a new division in the agency focused on the needs of the tax practitioner community. And New York Democratic Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez shouldn't get to block Twitter users, according to a suit filed hours after a federal appeals court barred President Trump from doing so.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need on one legal research platform. Guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
Joan, thank you. Now another legal story we're watching this morning. Prosecutors saying fund manager Jeffrey Epstein used his wealth and power to sexually abuse dozens of young girls. But Epstein says the sex trafficking charges against him are preempted by a controversial plea deal he struck with prosecutors in Florida more than a decade ago. We get more in the story from Bloomberg's June Grasso and Patricia Hurtado.
Pat, we'll start by explaining a little more that Florida deal that Epstein made.
Well, it's a little murky still, and people are trying to unearth the details, but from what we understand is he pled guilty to state charges, and a federal investigation essentially went away, and he got a non-prosecution agreement with the Southern District of Florida. And the U.S. attorney was Alex Acosta, who's now Labor Secretary.
The Manhattan U.S. attorney said that defense is not going to work, anticipating the defense, and saying that it's just not going to work.
The government has been criticized by the victims, these women victims and their lawyers, about the steal that made the case go away, and the victims were never notified. And a federal judge in Florida has already also criticized the deal. Under the law, victims are entitled to know that there's a proceeding in their case, that something's happened in it. And they're entitled to talk and give their comments and get restitution. And this didn't happen. So the judge in that case, as a civil suit, ruled that there had been a constitutional violation for their rights. And it's still being reviewed. He anticipated he was going to get criticism for why are you bringing this case when it already happened.
Does it make a difference that the prosecutors say there's new evidence and victims outside of the original Florida investigation?
The government says they have new evidence, and one of the counts has nothing to do with the previous allegations, that they have new complainants, and they also invited new anyone who has new evidence or wants to come forward and say they're either a victim or a witness to anything he has done, they would like to invite them to come and help their case. So they insist that they're on strong legal grounds.
And that's Bloomberg News legal reporter Patricia Hurtado speaking to June Grasso. You can listen to more legal analysis like this on Bloomberg Politics, Policy, Power, and Law, weekdays at 12 p.m. Wall Street time here on Bloomberg Radio. And find more legal news at BloombergLaw.com. Attorneys will find exceptional legal research and business development tools there as well. Visit BloombergLaw.com for more information. Right now, S&P futures are down 6.5 points. Dow futures down 52. NASDAQ futures down 21. The DAX in Germany is down 0.5%. 10-year Treasury down 11/32, yield 2.10%. The euro 1.1224 against the dollar. And Bloomberg Daybreak continues. This is Bloomberg.